Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody. This is Jennifer Hill with Get Yourself the Job, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, we have a very special guest who is my own personal business coach and somebody who I respect and admire tremendously. Today, we're going to be speaking with Julian Adler. Julian is an international executive coach and leadership trainer based in Silicon Valley. He's highly sought after for his unique approach to propelling his clients to success through a combination of organizational development, communication, business skills training, and behavioral modification. An entrepreneur himself since he resold candy for a profit at summer camp, Julian provides his clients with real-world business support learned from his being an owner and operator of several organizations, including a painting company to a software firm, an IT company, as well as an angel investment firm. Julian also draws on several modalities, including psychology, conversational hypnosis, neuro-linguistic programming, to help reframe mental and emotional behavioral patterns to put his clients in alignment with their success. Julian has worked with executives from everything to startup entrepreneurs to top professionals from Fortune 100 companies, including Adobe, the American Red Cross, Apple, Google, Intel, Mashable, Logitech, Microsoft, NASA, Netflix, Seagate, and many more, just to name a few. So Julian, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer.
Thank you. So what we're going to talk to Julian about today is a very interesting subject that I know he has been instrumental for me in my growth and development over the last about 2 years that I've been working with him as a business coach. What we're going to be focusing on is perspective. How important is perspective? And because one of Julian's specialties is helping individuals really own their leadership skills, we're going to talk about the evolution of leadership skills that occur for people as they move up the management ladder. And what is required? Is it a skills matter? Is it a perspective matter? And Julian's even going to give us some examples of how organizations should be fostering management throughout the organization. So Julian, why don't you tell us a little bit how you became an expert in this field?
Well, it started when I had the software company. I've always been interested in personal development. It's something that I've been working on my whole life, and I spent a lot of time and a lot of money towards that aim. When I had my software company, we wrote customized software tailored to a business's specific business model. And, of course, computers software development doesn't lie. It's ones and zeros. You can very quickly see when you're modeling a business through a software application that there's problems, where there's communication problems or where there's informational transfer problems or what have you. And so I became really good at working with the owners and the executives of the company to not only understand their company as well as they did, but to understand the pitfalls and the issues and the problems they had with communication and leadership. And be able to model that in the software. Well, what it turned out was my entire job went from being a software developer to being an architect to being a people manager. I ended up coaching these people through, you know, their various challenges to be able to eventually model that in a software application. From there, it just was a natural progression when I stopped doing software. I just didn't stop with the personnel development.
Interesting. Okay, great. So you kind of organically fell into this role of leadership and business development when you were working at the software company out of necessity, it sounds like.
Oh, it was definitely needed. If I had not done it, we would not have been able to write the applications. Most companies exist as a system that exists, you know, and it's designed to perpetuate itself. So in order for a system to change, it requires something outside that system to impact it. And like it or not, I was that thing at the time that was impacting it.
Interesting. So tell me a little bit about what is the evolution of leadership skills that occur for people as they move up the management ladder? I know me personally, when I first began managing, I apologized to any of my first employees who worked with me because it is an art. There is an art to management, whether you're at a 5-person company or a 5,000-person company. So tell us a little bit about the evolution of the leadership skills.
I would love to. Actually, I think we should start by defining what leadership is.
Okay,
to me, leaders have three things, three elements, if you will. The first is that they have followers. That's, you know, kind of obvious. However, you could be leading yourself. So as long as you have a follower of one, you've got followers. The second is a leader must be able to inspire those followers. And the third is a leader must be able to inspire those followers to create a world that would have not existed in any other way. So leadership's not just about telling people what to do, but understanding how people interact, resolving problems before they impact the bottom line, and basically getting everyone moving in the same direction towards whatever the vision may be. When we talk about the management ladder, we're talking about many different tiers of management. Each one has a particular focus. So the first line supervisors basically focus on operational management skills, and really they just oversee work. That's what they do, keep people accountable to getting things done. The middle managers are more organizational management people. That's the skills that they require. And they coordinate work among functional areas and groups of people. Senior management levels, which are the next tier up, work on organizational development. They develop and monitor strategic plans. They manage the day-to-day operations. And, of course, your C-level, the top part of the pyramid, they develop the long-term vision plan and transition to the next stage of growth. What's interesting is in order to do these things we defined as leadership, it's important to be a really good manager. And the skills of which can be placed basically into three categories: technical, human, and conceptual. What's interesting to me and what I've learned from my experience, about basically 20 some odd years of experience, is that when one moves up the management ladder, they release their dependence on technical knowledge and they become more focused on personnel development. You could kind of think of it as shifting from making and delivering a product or service to making and delivering people of excellence.
So there's
a huge perspective shift as one goes up that ladder.
Yeah, humans become the commodity then. As you kind of move up, it's less about the product that you're dealing with and more about the human capital.
Absolutely. And companies like Google and Apple, who have these wonderful campuses, they understand this. They have, you can't walk 120 feet, I think, in Google without being able to run across some place you can get something to eat. They've got recreation and relaxation areas. They understand that the human capital is as important, if not more important, than the products they create.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. So you mentioned technical skills, human skills, and conceptual skills. Can you elaborate a little bit on some of those categories? I mean, technical, I think, is pretty self-explanatory, that you have a certain level of hard skills that are going to be necessary for any job. But tell us a little bit about each of these categories.
Well, you're right. Technical skills is pretty straightforward. I mean, if you're in software, you need to understand how to read and write code. We call that the technical abilities, your technical skills. It's what you do to get the job done. Human skills are a little different. They focus on communication, spotting and developing leadership talent, giving constructive feedback and support, keeping people accountable for results, managerial work. Also, which most people don't think of, is modeling integrity and authenticity and conflict resolution. The conceptual skills include strategic thinking, planning, deploying and redeploying resources among units or teams, managing competing priorities, fostering interdependence, and building systems and processes. The way I like to look at this is I look at these skills as a terraced room that's holding a dance party.
Okay.
So the workers or the technicians of the company are on the dance floor having a grand time, or at least hopefully having a grand time. There's a lot going on the dance floor, and when you're standing there, your perspective goes about as far as the people around you. On the dance floor, we tend to think a lot about our own performance and maybe even competing with people to see who's a better dancer. The first line managers are not on the dance floor. Instead, they're on a terrace one floor up. So from this view, they can see the dance floor better, and they can observe how people are interacting. And one story up, they can see how well some people dance compared to others, and they can communicate directly to them, making suggestions. The middle-level managers are now two stories up. They're on the second tier from the dance floor. And here they have a better vantage point on how the dance floor is moving, who's missing, and how to get a better sense of how everybody is working together.
Yeah, in the flow.
And then the top-level managers,
Oh, I said in the flow. You can kind of get a better sense the higher up you get of the flow of the dance floor itself.
Absolutely. And these top-level managers are really three stories above the dance floor. This is pretty far up, and it's hard to distinguish between individuals. So the focus is now more on how the dance floor is moving and how the room is functioning as a whole, and how to deliver the best experience holistically as possible. Each balcony gives a manager a vantage point that is more distant to the dance floor. So when this happens, technical skills such as dancing are less important.
You don't need to be a good dancer at the top is what you're telling us.
You better be, I guess. you focus less on the technical skills and observational strategic skills become more into play. I kind of like that visual to represent.
It's a great analogy. Yeah, that's a wonderful analogy. Well, here's a question for you along those lines, as I really can visually see that and experience that. What, from one perspective to another, so say you have somebody who their whole entire career, they've been on the dance floor, and for the first time in their career, they have a chance to move up to one of the higher level terraces. How does that person need to shift from a being standpoint, from an interacting, from a perspective standpoint? How does one even go mentally from the dance floor into being one of the terraced management levels? And what does that person need to do to shift in their consciousness and hit that extra level of conceptual skills or that extra level of the human skills that you were talking about?
Well, it's an excellent question. Well, it depends on how far up they jump. They jump up to the frontline supervisor, then they get a chance to work on a different level. It's not about being an individual contributor alone at that point in time. It's making certain that everybody has what they need to do the best job that they can. So you immediately move from, being mostly focused on your technical abilities, and you start to increase your human abilities, your ability to communicate well, and of course a little bit more of your conceptual abilities. One of the things that I recommend to people who I've worked with who are making the jump into first line managers or supervisors is to remind them that they were on the dance floor. And so they know what it felt like. They know how good of a dancer everybody is or not, and they know where they fit in, to remind themselves of where they are, because it's very easy when you start becoming a management level to sort of forget what it was like to be the person on the dance floor. And if they're jumping up a couple levels, then it's actually a little bit more complicated, because you're moving from just overseeing work, which, is still highly technical. Let's say the first line managers are kind of 60% technical.
Yeah,
30% human skills and 10% conceptual. When you go jump to a middle manager, you're only 30% technical. You're actually more 50 to 60% human skills, and 10 to 20% conceptual. So you move up in people. So it's about how to get people to work together more as a team or groups of teams. And then, of course, if you jump to the top level management, you're going to be about 20% technical, 20%. Human and 60% conceptual, as you're working on the strategy, the vision, if you will, of the business. So each stage, the perspective moves from the technical to the human and from the human to the conceptual.
And so there's a couple of circumstances that I would love your feedback on. For example, for me, stepping into my own company and then eventually hiring employee number one, I had always been on the dance floor. And I thought I was a good dancer when I was out there. And I was pretty good at recruiting, which is what I was hired to do by another company, until I all of a sudden found myself at the top level, where I'm now creating strategic vision for the company and managing and overseeing people. And as somebody who had been a quote-unquote dancer before that, there was definitely a learning curve and a shell shock. Are there any tools or resources that you could say for somebody who perhaps wants to make either a first level, a second, or a third level tier jump from where they're at, but they might not have the wherewithal or the know-how? Are there any tools or skills you would recommend for those individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. Learning technical skills is pretty straightforward. But what about the human skills and the conceptual skills, right? They seem to be a little bit more abstract. So I like this type of thought process and this type of question, because it points to two misconceptions, people have about moving up the management ladder. The first misconception is that learning management skills, you learn the skills that you need for the next ladder up, and then once you get to that rung, you learn the skills for the next rung. And that's not how it works. It's important to understand that hiring managers won't promote or hire anybody who are not already demonstrating these three skills in their job.
They will not? I want to make sure our listeners heard that. So you said they will not promote somebody who doesn't already exhibit these skills naturally.
Precisely. People think that the skills are learned for each rung as you go up each rung, but really these skills are the core They're basically core management skills that you have, and that you just change your perspective and your percentage of those skills as you move up the ladder. So, you know, everybody understands that there's some, you know, so there's some level of on-the-job training you're going to gain once you get in a management position. That's true. But before hiring anybody, managers must see that you have the potential to lead. So if you have a career path that involves management, it's best to start learning on what you can do now and practicing it and then demonstrating it works. The second misconception, which I think is really interesting, is it takes a certain personality or a certain type of person to be a good manager, which, of course, is not true. Anybody can be a great manager. See, the thing is, there's tons of these skills that you can learn both inside and outside the organization. Obviously, there's tons of books and videos to watch on leadership. You can just pick a tactic and try it out. But basically, you ask your direct manager for feedback and career advice. That's the best way to start going about it. You know, of course, you can do this during your performance review, or you can take your manager to lunch, candidly ask them, you know, how they see your career and what you need to work on, and then work on it. You know, you ask people for feedback. It's hugely important. The managers that I see that are looking to promote people are looking for people who are actively looking for feedback. They want to know that you're hungry for that next position. They want to know that you're interested in your own growth, and not only your own growth, but the growth of your team. And of course, it's being visible to your supervisor. So that means that you have lots of meetings. You attend meetings. You have lots of meetings with your manager to talk about things, strategic vision, and what have you. You know, it's easy for people to find employees who can get the job done, but much, much more difficult for those to find really good communicators who get along well with others and who are team focused.
So
Go ahead.
If you have somebody, so here was a question that just came up at a lunch the other day that I was attending. And what was interesting was you had this individual who was extremely bright, very intelligent, very driven, and had always been in a dance floor position, but is looking to move up to, say, a third level terrace or a second level terrace position. I know you're saying that people can spot this, but most employers, my experience on the recruitment side, aren't necessarily going to consider somebody who's only been on the dance floor their whole life. Are there any strategies or anything that people could do? I know you mentioned some books. I've heard of a great one called Leaders Eat Last that's supposed to be brilliant about how leaders really put everybody else on their team first, and they're the last ones to eat or to take credit for something because you have to put everybody else on your team ahead of you. So are there any particular books on leadership that you would recommend or anything that you would suggest if you were having lunch with somebody who said, hey, I've been doing X my whole career. What I really want to be doing is Y or Z. What would you tell that person if you were coaching them?
Oh, I have an entire list of development books, which I don't have off the top of my head. So I'm kind of surprised. You know, I can provide you a list that you can put up on a website.
That would be great. Yeah, if you could share that, we can list it on the archive for the show because I think that might be helpful.
I have about 30 or 40 books that you can use. The book that I just recommended to a client this morning, actually. It's a book called The Enemies of Trust by Robert Galford and Ansible Drapow, I think is how you pronounce her name. It's really based on how to develop trust within the business organization. And trust is it's just an essential component to being able to work on that, work up the management ladder.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing. And so you said anybody could theoretically become a manager. It's just about getting away from the technical skills and developing and training themselves in the leadership skills and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the leadership skills are a lot of communication. It's a lot about how you communicate yourself. The thing I like about trust, if we want to come back to that topic, is because for me, trust is based on three elements. One is credibility. Credibility means that you know other people find you credible, or you've got qualities that distinguish you from other people. And of course, if you're hired for a company, then well, you're credible.
Yes,
you got hired. The second one is commitment, and commitment simply is the ability to demonstrate that you can make and keep promises. So that if you say you're going to get things done on time, you get them done on time. If you say you're going to meet with the client, you meet with the client, and so forth. The last one is character. And character is all about how you transmit to somebody else who you are. And that's the area where I spend a lot of time as an executive coach. Generally, people who I work with have a lot of credibility, and they've been able to demonstrate commitment, although sometimes they could use some help in that area, but they still can demonstrate it. It's really in how they go about expressing their leadership that and their personality that we work on. Again, it's the soft skills. It's the human skills. It's how to communicate with another person. And, of course, the people who are the best communicators tend to be the ones that run up the ladder.
Got it. Interesting. Yeah, it all does come down to communication. I know that I personally learned a lot about communication years ago, and you and I have spoken about this, I think, about landmark education. There are so many wonderful programs out there that can teach people. Essentially, what I learned in Landmark was how to be your word. I think most of us live our lives reactively, and we just respond to circumstances in our lives, and we don't know ourselves as our word, and we're not trustworthy. We're not trustworthy to our friends, to the other people in our lives, and people can't count on us. And I think what you just tied in, which is really important, is that in order to be an above average or an excellent leader, you must have integrity and you must have the trust of your team. In fact, I think I just read an article this week, perhaps it was on LinkedIn, about the necessity of teams to feel safe. And they had done in this article an interesting study to find out what had people tick and what had people be successful. And it all came down to if employees didn't feel safe, then, that's what it was. It was a gentleman. It was a TED Talk. And I think I just shared it recently this week on LinkedIn. He said, if your employees don't feel safe, then they're automatically not going to be happy or long-term employees. And I think the example that he gave was, he gave an example. He was waiting in an airport. And he wanted to be able to board a plane. And the person said, oh, no, you absolutely cannot board now. You have to board in the right order. And the example he gave is that she was so fearful of her supervisors that, God forbid, she did something wrong, that she was going to be terminated, that there was this lack of flow and happiness in her job. And then he gave the example of Southwest. And he said, well, why do people fly Southwest? It's not because they like the planes, but it's because the employees at Southwest have this ability to be free and be themselves without fear of repercussions if they screw something up or let a guest on at the wrong time. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. That's communicating and trust and safety are definitely three of the cornerstones of good leadership. The subconscious mind, as you know, I'm very, very interested in neuroscience, is all about keeping you safe. And a good manager is going to be able to help facilitate that as far as a group. And of course, as you go up the management layer, you're going to be dealing with safety on a larger and larger scale.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things that I know that you were invaluable for me in teaching me how to interact and be a better communicator, I'm going to be at a loss here for remembering exactly what it was, but it's not perspectives, it's stances. Is that what you had worked with me on, which was the different stances that you could approach conversations from? Do you know what I'm referring to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit of behavior modification, behavior flexibility, being able to approach a conversation in a way that matches the energy type, if you will, or the communication type of the person speaking with you. And there are a lot of them, and each one is based around a sort of a grid of inclusive or exclusive. Inclusive meaning you're making people feel like they're part of the group, or exclusive, meaning that you're making a separation between you and they, and then advocacy and inquiry. Advocacy is expressing your opinion or telling somebody what to do, and inquiry, of course, is asking them questions. And based on that diagram, that four-square diagram, there's different languaging types that you can use or different stances you can use to be able to create safety between you and the person coming towards you.
Yeah, I think that was very valuable. In fact, I just got complimented by somebody, I believe it was last week, and meant to thank you for it because you're the one who taught me this, is curiosity and how important as a leader or as a business owner, being curious about a situation rather than just reacting directly to it, kind of getting curious of why is somebody not happy in the organization, or being curious about, oh, what could be there? And I think that was one of the stances you and I talked about, if I recall.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What's interesting about inquiry is it creates credibility. People feel that you're more credible when you ask questions. When you advocate, you lose a little bit of credibility. And I find that the best managers are the ones that inquire, not leading them anywhere, but just simply asking their direct report questions, and their direct report through those questions figuring out the answer to the problem. Those are the best leaders. They're not the ones that are directed and tell you what to do, but the ones that help you figure out what the best thing is to do. Everyone wants to feel accomplished, and everyone wants to feel as though they're contributing, and being told what to do all the time doesn't necessarily foster that. When you bring something out of a person, when you ask them the right series of questions where they come up with the answer on their own, they feel accomplished, and of course they connect with you about that. They see you as a person who helped facilitate that.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Well, I don't want to skim over what we were talking about earlier, though, about the human skills versus the conceptual skills. So as we discussed, learning technical skills is pretty easy, and I know the conceptual and human are a little bit more abstract. Is there anything else that you would recommend that our listeners could do to enhance their efficacy in those areas? You know, getting in the inquiry of things, reading some of these leadership books we're talking about. Are there any programs that you're aware of? Again, for me, I'm an advocate of landmark education, and I'm sure there's a million business classes out there that you can take on leadership as well.
Yeah, there are lots and lots of practices. I work through California Leadership for a lot of the leadership that I learned from Mary Jo Franklin and her son Brian Franklin. There's a lot of people out there that that do this sort of work and who provide different things. But the most important thing that I think is necessary for a person to run up the leadership is to learn to be a good communicator. Being a good communicator, both in receiving feedback, giving feedback, and so on and so forth, is essential. And I also think being visible is super important. Like, you know, being visible to your supervisor and discussing advancement is one thing, but being visible on projects, being visible in a variety of different ways is super important. As I mentioned, it's easy for managers to find employees and get the job done, but much more difficult to find people who are really good communicators. So with people, you can take whatever resource you'd like. I would just say pick something and integrate it into your business life and see how it works and keep, altering it. Because leadership, there's no one way to do leadership. There's many different ways. In fact, I think there's as many different ways of doing leadership as there are people. What I do is help understand an individual and then tailor their behavior to their leadership style rather than try to force a specific style.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you raise, is that there's many different angles and approaches that you can take to it, but as long as you're facilitating healthy working communication within an organization, that's what's going to make a leader grow. And so I liked what you said about being visible as well, and how that, I believe, would increase your chances for a promotion. Are there any other tips that you would give to our listeners out there about how to get promoted, working on their communication, reading the right books, going to the right sort of leadership training sessions? Are there any other tips or suggestions for promotions that you've helped executives facilitate or move up the ladder, so to speak?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to be with being seen. Just like anything in life, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. In your office, you never want your impressive work to go unnoticed. I mean, if you created something, let's say that you created a device that harnesses one day's worth of the sunshine, and it provides all of the energetic outputs the world needs for an entire year, which is, you can imagine, a pretty amazing device. And if you were on a desert island and no one ever knew about it, would it be worth anything? The answer, of course, is no. You want people to know what you're doing. Half of your job is to do the job. The other half is to make sure that other people know about it. I don't mean that as far as grandstanding or being arrogant, but
that was
about
my
working
next
on
question.
Projects that are visible.
Yeah, it's because it makes
about
me.
Working on projects visible.
Yeah, it makes me think of, I don't want our listeners to go out there and run into their boss's office saying, "I want to be acknowledged. Look at how amazing I am." You have to kind of approach it tactfully. So, what are some ways to make sure that your work gets noticed without, as you said, grandstanding, and without making sure that you are not coming across as cocky or over the top? How do you do that delicately in the right way politically when you're within a large organization trying to move up?
That's an excellent point. And really, it's working on projects that are visible to upper management. It makes it more natural for you to talk about your work. I always like going and asking questions to upper management when I have, not just a question that is a banal question, but a question where you're really seeking understanding. So you're thinking about strategy, about a project you're working on, going to one of the managers that are going to be impacted by it and asking their take on it. Again, inquiry creates credibility. Taking on projects that support the broader success of the organization obviously will get you seen. Volunteering for projects that offer you the opportunity to interact with many different levels or many different people that are either at the same level as your manager or above. I call this building bridges, where you volunteer to help out. I think it's one of the things that has made, for example, when I work with people at Google, I'm working basically with the director level. So there's many different directors, a whole bunch of directors levels. And one of the things that is important for the directors, the ones that have been promoted, and all of mine have been promoted, they've been promoted because they were actually seen. They built bridges to different groups, and people knew them. If you're alone working in your office and no one knows you're doing anything, you're not likely to be promoted. People have to see either the results of your work, or they have to see you doing the work or asking questions or what have you in order to know that you're busy doing work. And of course, you can always send an email to your supervisor, you know, one day a week on a Friday if you want, letting him or her know that you've accomplished a few things and asking them questions. One of the best ways, of course, is inquiry. I use that all the time and recommend it all the time. If somebody doesn't know something, I don't have any shame about going up to someone and saying, hey, I've got a question. I'm working on X thing, and I would love some feedback on this. A lot of people who I've started to work with have difficulty in doing that because they don't want to be seen as not knowing something. They certainly don't want to be wrong or what have you. And what they find is when they start inquiring, those people open up. Everybody likes to be a mentor. Everybody likes to talk about what their ideas are, and it actually creates a really great bond between the individuals.
Yeah, and I think that's brilliant. What you're saying is you have to strategically align yourself with people who are going to see and appreciate your work. And for example, with this individual I was having lunch with the other day, I said that the closer you can get to working with the highest level management at the firm, the more likely you are going to be able to move up. And we see this in the legal industry all the time. The people who typically go on to run law firms start off in a staff or a support role, and eventually they work their way up through being indispensable, which is actually a talk I'm giving in 2 weeks about the changing role of the legal assistant. And one of the most important things that I talk to people about is if you do want to become a leader or you want to be indispensable to your organization, so whether it's a leadership role or just remaining in a position and continuing to grow and thrive, there are a couple things that you need to be able to do. Some of which you and I have already talked about, you know, being proactive, always learning, being reliable, being a good listener, being somebody who has integrity in doing what they say and saying and keeping their word if they say they're going to do something, and being helpful and willing to take on additional projects. And of course, on that list I have on there, being trustworthy, because at the end of the day, whether you're somebody on the dance floor, on the first, second, or third tier or terrace, it's important at all those levels to have trustworthiness. Now, one of the questions I had for you is, what happens if you're at any of one of these levels? What are the ways that you could lose trust if you're in an organization and lose those chances for promotion? What would that look like if you were coaching somebody in an organization? What would you tell them to avoid doing?
To avoid? Well, that's a very long list, but I think what I can do about breaking it down. There's a lot of things that people do that are not necessarily bad, but just don't provide any value. I say, you know, if you're going to do something, provide value, right? One of the biggest things that I see managers do, which is a hindrance to their growth, is being consistent. And not only inconsistent with their actions, but inconsistent with their messages, and worse, inconsistent standards. So they treat people differently based on whether they like them or not. Not intervening when there are problems with particular managers. I really think it's important if you're a manager that you're taking care of your direct reports. Your role is to make sure that they have the best environment in which to grow, best environment in which to work, and not intervening when there's a problem with another manager or one of your direct reports is having difficulty with another direct report. It's about intervening as soon as you possibly can. Providing false feedback, I've seen that being done. Not trusting others, which leads to controlling or middle managing or micromanaging. Ignoring the elephants in the parlor, basically the issues that everyone knows about but cannot be discussed openly. Accepting rumors as fact, and allowing rumors to thrive. Basically, I think there's four things, what I call four horses of your personal apocalypse that could happen, which would create an environment in which trust is eroded. You know, the first one is assumptions, making assumptions that things are happening. The second one is having expectations. Now, I know this is a challenging one to talk about in business. We have goals, which are great, but expectations are sort of a hidden force. I expect you to behave a certain way without telling you, giving you context why. You know, these hidden expectations are unhealthy. The third one is judgment. And the fourth one is obligations. We make people feel obligated. All four of those items are going to erode trust. They break away at the foundation of either the credibility, commitment, and or character.
Yeah, I remember you and I have done a lot of work on that. And when you had first shared with me about those, it became automatically visible to me in my life where those things were stopping me in my business. Because our fallback as human beings is we tend to judge ourselves, we tend to judge others' performance. And for me, as coming from having been on the dance floor and being a really top performing dancer, I had these unrealistic, I know, right? I wish I were a good dancer in real life, but for this example, we'll say I was a good dancer. But in this situation with my staff, I expected everybody to perform at a level that was unrealistic. And I remember, thank goodness you came along, because you said, Jen, the worst thing you could do is expect other people to perform at your level and then judge them for it. And so I think I was operating within all four horses of my apocalypse, because it was dangerous and it was creating a lot of dissension and unhappiness within my company, because I was forcing people and putting these obligations on people to operate at the same level I operated with without understanding what they were designed for and how they could be effective.
Absolutely. And it's very common. You know, I accept everybody for where they are, and I can also help them improve. It's the same paradox. You're perfect. And you can stand a little bit of improvement. You know, we all have these things. The main thing, though, with the judgment, which is interesting, is that self-judgment can be as harmful, if not more harmful, than judging others. Because you lose a leadership point. And judging others sometimes can be seen or misinterpreted as strength. When you judge yourself, it's only seen as weakness. And not that a manager must appear to be strong all the time, but a manager must have a foundation of strength. I'm going to protect my direct reports. I want to make sure that they're taken care of, that they have the resources they need to get the best job done and to grow into other positions. I mean, that's the role of a manager, really. So I love the fact that you brought that up and you called yourself out of it. Because it's a really good manager is going to know the capabilities of their direct reports. And they're going to be able to put that direct report in not only a position for success, but also growth, where they can be good at the level in which they're working, and they can stretch themselves into a higher level. And eventually, over time, maybe they will reach your level of productivity. Maybe they won't, but to have that expectation that they're going to be able to do the same thing as you is a little bit much. So it's a bit forced.
Yeah, I remember when I learned that, and I could really feel this shift in the energy of the organization within my own company and how we began to interact differently. And that leads me to one of my last questions for you, which is, even for me internally, we promoted one of my team up to a director level, which is great, and she had never been in management before. So what do you say, how should organizations be fostering management throughout the organization? I know you were instrumental and very helpful for me in directing, and here I didn't know how to manage. It was the blind leading the blind, and thank God you came along and started teaching me some of these things, and now it became my turn to kind of pass off the baton and begin to teach my director how to manage, which is an uphill battle in many cases, because, you know, unless you're constantly on coaching calls like you and I are, it's this constant inquiry and learning of, okay, did this work, did that work? So how can organizations foster the opportunity for management and for the growth of their own internal managers?
I think that this is a deep and varied question, and I'd be a little bit more general about it to start, and then we can talk about specifics if you'd like.
Okay.
Leadership development is critically important for organizations, because an organization is constantly growing and it's transitioning and what have you. If organizations pay attention to leadership transitions at all levels, managers who lead will emerge with a higher level of competence with each transition. So it's important for a business, excuse me, to offer communication and leadership programs within internally and externally. It's about bringing people in, whether it's coaching or whether it's mentorship programs or whether they're encouraging a personal development. It's about understanding that there's a pyramid here. There's a focus, a different focus for each level, and encouraging people to embrace that level and grow, of course, grow beyond it. I have sort of a leadership effectiveness pyramid that I like to use that I recommend
tell
to
us.
Companies that I work with. Pardon?
I said, tell us about it. I would love to know more about that.
Oh, okay, great. Well, it's a four-level pyramid, so basically it's got four levels to it. And the bottom level of the pyramid is be present. So in other words, be present to not only what's happening in your organization, but what's happening in yourself. Be present to things that are working or things that are not working, people who are communicating, not communicating, so on and so forth. Being present is the base of this thing. The next level up is be accountable. Accountability, for me, very simply stated, is that you are responsible for everything that's happening in your experience. Now, I'm not saying that you're responsible for that person who just cussed you out or that person who didn't get the job done, but you are responsible for the fact that you attracted that in some fashion. There's three stances, if you will, that are unaccountable. One's a victim, the other one's a perpetrator, and the other one's a hero. All of those stances basically are blaming another stance for their involvement in the experience. And I spend a lot of time on what they call the drama triangle or the accountability triangle. I spend a lot of time working with people who are having conflicts in that triangle. Mm. But being accountable basically says that I account that I am in control, if you will, or at least management of my area, myself, and my group. The next level up is where you start to have influence on other people, and that is be clear. And this is where a lot of people fall down, is being clear not only on what you want, but be clear to others on how you'd like them to do that the job. And clarity is vitally important. And of course, the capstone would be powerful. That's acting on the clarity, on the accountability, and on the presence. One thing in this triangle, which is interesting, is I don't usually mention it, but the triangle itself is in and of itself is a step we call be sustainable, basically creating systems that allow you to facilitate the presence, the accountability, the clarity, and the power. So if there's a system of growth, like the leadership effectiveness pyramid, if a company has a culture where they are focused on growth and on personnel development, then leadership is going to thrive. And I do my best when I enter into an organization, whether it's a big organization, such as Google or Apple or what have you, or if it's a smaller, two-person operation, the same principles apply. And, of course, the more people you have, the more these principles are important.
Yeah, that's extremely helpful, Julian. I'm so happy we've had you on the show today. We're running close to out of time, and I do want to make sure, because you have been such a tremendous resource for me over these last few years, I do want to make sure our listeners know how to find you on social media, that they know where your business website is. So why don't you go ahead and tell us your website or any social media handles that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I'm definitely on LinkedIn, and I definitely have a website, neither of which has been touched in years. It's something that I've been intending to do. I'm so busy these days. I've got a little bit of a waiting list for people working with me that I spend the majority of my time working with my clients and not so much time promoting myself. That being said, my name is spelled J-U-L-I-E-N. Last name is A-D-L-E-R. And you can find me either on LinkedIn or julianadler.com.
Awesome, Julian. Yeah, Julian has been my business coach for the last several years, has been very, very helpful in helping me deal with growth in my own organization as well as my own personal growth. And what we'll go ahead and do is I'll have Julian put together a list of some of his favorite business books for leadership and training and so on. I remember there was a great one about getting the right people on the bus. Does that one ring a bell, Julian? I know it was a great business book that I had read years ago. And if I can think of it, I'll include it in the list of resources that we'll include with your bio on the archive section of the website. And so for those of you tuning in, again, this is Jennifer Hill with Get Yourself the Job. Today, we've been on the phone with Julian Adler, who is a top business and executive coach based out of Silicon Valley. And next week, I am delighted to have on the show Carrie Dolan. And Carrie Dolan is the founder of a company called Opt In, and it's about helping moms get back to work. I was just asked about that a couple of weeks ago at a speaking engagement for veterans, and one of the moms there said, Jen, how do moms get back to work after they've been out of the employment workforce for a little while? And so I was delighted to connect with Carrie. You can find a lot of her articles on the Huffington Post. And she'll be talking to us about mothers and how mothers can really decide when the right time is to leave the workplace and when the right time is to go back, as well as having an empowering and empowered transition back into the workplace. So we're very excited to have Carrie joining us on the show next week. And as of today, you can find us on iTunes or on Google Play. Just look up Get Yourself the Job, and you can find us and subscribe subscribe to us weekly. It's free on iTunes or Google Play. And you can also find many of the blogs as well as the discussions and topics that I'm speaking with my guests about on getyourselfthejob.com, which is my blog. So this is Jennifer Hill with Julian Adler. Julian, any last thoughts or anything for our guests this afternoon?
No, but I really appreciate you inviting me. It's been a delight to speak with you.
Oh, Julian, I'm so happy and thrilled that our listeners got a chance to have just even a sliver of just the intelligence and the integrity and the wonderful wisdom that you've brought to my life in the last few years that we've worked together. So I'm very grateful to have you on the show. And again, tune in every Monday at 4 p.m. here on LA Talk Radio to get yourself the job. So thank you so much for joining us today, Julian.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.